This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under Stewardship Resources or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a Deacon and Trustee Seminar held on August 5, 2025 in Arthur, Illinois.
Greetings. This morning about 9 o'clock, when we were gathering here, back in our hometown in Apple Creek, Ohio, there was approximately 25 to 30 individuals that started their morning gathering to give their time today to a group of people that are some of those angels that we've heard talked about. And many of those people are people that are giving for the joy of giving, to make a difference in somebody else's lives. They serve in the organization I'm talking about is called Hearts and Hoofbeats, and it's a therapeutic writing arena, writing place, where they have people with special needs come there and they write, and to help meet the emotional and the spiritual needs of these individual people. Recently, I was to one of their functions, and the director there shared a message to all of us, and his story was that my wife and I started this organization back in 2021 with the goal to make a difference, knowing that horses and special needs people connect. They had that vision, they felt that on their heart. They took it a step further and they actually put that into action. The story that he shared was profound. We heard a lot of different things this morning already about Jesus' teachings, Old Testament, New Testament. There's a ton of them in there. There's a lot of different things in there in the Bible that we can apply today that Jesus taught on giving and also the miracles that he performed. But the story that Andrew shared that evening was of a 42-year-old girl, single girl or single woman. She was at the age of 5-6 years old. She had some special challenges. But during that time, she went through a period in life that left her to, in our words, handicapped. She is nonverbal. She can't talk. She cannot help herself to the bathroom, things like that. So she had caretakers that were caring for her on a daily basis. And when I'm saying that, not just caring for her basic needs, they were going with her to the bathroom. She was wearing diapers. This lady was brought to this facility, and after about 2 months of coming there and being part of riding one of those horses, he asked her mother one day, "Is it making any difference? The work that we're doing here, the interactions, does it make any difference to her?" And he said that mother said with tears in her eyes, "You are making a difference." That girl that from 5 years old up to 42 years old was in diapers, today she's going to the bathroom on her own. And that's a miracle. Jesus had miracles back in his day. He performed them. We read about them. But friends, what they're doing today, those people that got up this morning, they were intentional in their giving. We heard a lot about giving this morning. I just appreciated and was grateful for the opportunity to be here this morning. But what we heard, and I think Chris mentioned it again, time is one of the purest forms of alms. I don't have the words exactly like he stated them. When we talk about giving, there's a lot of different things in the Bible that we can read, a lot of different examples. And I studied this topic. I have some different things to share, but there's many different ways. And I'm not here to tell you it's this way, it's that way, but rather a few ways that can work. Then whatever God lays on your heart, that you take that and you are intentional and you put it into action. Giving starts with the heart. looking at Jesus, a lot of different examples that Jesus gave us from giving. And we heard quite a bit already about the Good Samaritan. But I'm going to go back to that, not saying the other guys didn't do a good job in laying that out, but that's what I had prepped for. I'm going to share that. So when we talk about giving, there are three forms of giving, three resources that we have, and that's money, time, and talent. And God has given all of us, every one of you out here, men and women, all three of those resources. We all have money, we all have time, and we all have talent. We can all give money. We've probably all given money, and I'm sure you people are people that give a lot. Some of you, as deacons, trustees, give a lot of your time. You've been chosen or been asked to walk alongside somebody to give in whatever need, probably more than you bargained for. But for all of us, we can easily, it's easy for us to just write a check and hand it there. But what I'm getting to with the Good Samaritan was, so if we just imagine that story, I like to imagine things in Scripture on how it might have been. But from the little bit that I've studied that setting, that scenario, this was a rocky road between Jerusalem and Jericho. And it was pretty barren, a lot of rocks and boulders. And this man, I appreciated what somebody brought out about him being a Jew. I never really put that together, but I think it made a lot of sense. But this man was on that journey, heading to Jericho. I'm sure he had a plan or he had a purpose that he was going there. And the unfortunate thing happened, as we all know. And then, like it was said, the priests came along, and they were the people that were chosen by the common folk to take care of the people. That was their purpose. That was what they were called to do. But when he came through there, he didn't have time because he had more important things to do. He had places to go and people to help, people to serve, things to give where people noticed. The Levite, another one, same deal. He came through there. He didn't have time. He went to the other side and kept on going. And I think both of them had the talent, the training to do that. They probably would have been late if they would have chosen to do that, but they still had that. But this Samaritan came through there, and like it was said, the difference was he came through here and he saw somebody in need and he had compassion. And that has to come from the heart. Unless we have compassion, we're a priest or a Levite. We can give, we can write that check and hurry on our way. But friends, I'm here to tell you, at the end of the day, no matter how much money you make, no matter how much you give, if you don't give from the heart, it's going to be in vain. We know the account of the widow's mite. The priests and everybody were there, they were watching. They had dropped all their coins in to get a lot of jingle, but the widow dropped two mites in, and that she gave her all. And going back to the Samaritan, I always envisioned this Samaritan guy, knowing that he was kind of despised by the common folk. He was on his little donkey, and he was going his merry way, going through this journey. He was probably, I don't know where his mind was, but I'm expecting he was alert, he was aware, watching out for the robbers and the thieves that slugged his brother. Then he saw this man in need, and I always envisioned him. He came around the curve, coming up through here, the crest of the hill. He saw this, and he hurries up to this man, and he gets down on his knees. He gets close to this man, and he starts serving him and giving to him. I imagine that man probably had a little bit of a smell to him. He was bruised. He was bleeding. He was not afraid to get down in the weeds, get that sweat, get that blood, get that smell on him. That is the true form of having compassion and having a true form of giving. What he gave all. He didn't stop there, but then he took him into the inn. We know the story as it goes from there. as we give in money, time, or talent. Those are kind of those are the three resources that God has given in our power to give. But as we give, I would just challenge all of us, me included, that we're not afraid to get down in the mud, in the weeds, come alongside and embrace and support. So what are the biblical guidelines for giving? Are there guidelines? And what did Jesus share about this? We're going to break the giving down into four different points. And that is intentional, proportional, sacrificial, and cheerful. This scripture in Luke 4 is what, I believe it was Leonard Metter, an AF advisor from, he's passed several years, but he had referred back to this several times as the Luke principle. And I like this scripture as it reads, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim the release to the captives, regaining of the sight to the blind, and set free those who are oppressed." And as we think about giving and a meaningful giving, this has been, for me personally, this has been a good measuring point. As we think about giving, there's a ton of different organizations out there that we can give to. But as I think about giving, sure, the question continues for many people, where should we give? Do we need guidelines? What is the right way to give? But I would challenge all of us that whatever we give to, let's make sure it's a charity or it's something that supports the kingdom, that supports kingdom work. And if it's something that has to do, or for myself, has to do with sharing the good news to the poor, and it's releasing the captives, and what it can be captive in many different ways, sight to the blind or freeing of the oppressed. Those are four key pillars that are key points that if we are looking for something to measure something, is this an organization that I can support that I want to give to? If it covers one of these, it's a very good indicator that it's something that's worth it to give to. The next question that a lot of times comes up is should I plan my generosity? Should I plan how much I give? Should I plan where I give? What is right? Jesus did say that if the left hand shouldn't know what the right hand is giving, so is it right for us to know and to plan the budget? And should we give personal, or should we give in business? And as deacons, trustees, that you're helping other people, how should they give? How should they give if they don't have a lot to give? And I don't profess to have all the answers to these questions. I'm simply just sharing some different points that I found in going through this. If we take it, again, go back to the Bible, if we go back to the Old Testament, back in that time, we read about Abraham when he tithed, and at that point, tithing, the form of tithing typically refers to 10%. But if we go back to the Old Testament and we calculate all the giving, all the tithing that they did, at that point, they were giving about 33% of their total. A good measuring stick for us today that I feel that we can, is a good reference point for us, is the 10%. But at the same time, I'm not saying that if you give 10%, then you're done. God might have called you to serve in ministry as a trustee, as a volunteer. He might have laid something else on your heart where you're giving a lot of your talent and a lot of your time. And money is simply the portable form of talent and time. If we think about the talent and time that God has given us, We are putting that to use in our businesses, in our work, whatever work we do. Is it farming? Is it business? Is it teaching? The work that we're doing, typically we're investing our talent and time, and we're getting resources in return. So money is the portable form. We can share that. We can give that. But God has also, I'm sure here it's the same way, but in Holmes County, there's a lot of different organizations. There's a lot of different boards. There's a lot of different committees. And for many of those, we need godly men, faithful men, that are willing to stand the test of time, or that have stood the test of time, or are willing to stand for what's right, we heard about when Mark Anthony was sharing about things when we have cash, that we sometimes tend to gravitate toward other things. But we need men for those organizations that are men to build the kingdom. And that is what God may have called you to do. And if he did, that might mean that you're not working as much as you could if you had a full-time job. And that means giving of your time. And that also is worth something. So there's more than one way, more than one form that you can give. But when we do give, I would encourage us to record what we're giving, especially if we're doing it in money. I just had a conversation a couple weeks ago with Mark Anthony, and then he mentioned to me, we were talking about giving, and then he just mentioned to me that many times when an individual has a need, mentally our mind goes to our wallet, and we think how much we give. Then we continue on with our work. Then we kind of forget about it. Later on we think about it. We thought, yeah, we did give. But many times if we don't record it, sometimes we think we did, but we actually didn't in terms of dollar value. So I would encourage us to, however you choose to do it, it does two things. One, it's the confidence, or the one way for me to keep me accountable that I know that we're giving. Secondly, as we are giving, I don't think any of you are giving for the reason that you can then come home at night and think other people know how much you gave. But it does something to us psychologically if we give. It opens our hands, and as our hands are open, we are also open to receiving if needed. But also it pulls us to God. It pulls us close to our Maker, realizing that we can give because he has given to us. The next one is proportional. We all know the account of the rich young ruler in Luke 18. When he came to Jesus and he asked us what he needs to do to inherit the kingdom. And then he said that Jesus told him, and he said he has done all of these. Then he said, well, go and sell all that you have and then come and serve me. And we know the response. He walked away and he was sad. We don't know the outcome. But I think that the message that Jesus is giving to us, that if we, from society level, looks like we have given a lot, if we have given it all, but if it's not been changed and transformed in here, in our heart, it's all a futile effort. We need to have that transformed heart. As we look at proportional, proportional giving, a couple things that I like to think about when we think about giving. First, we heard a lot of this. Our initial giving should be to our local church. That's what we're part of. That's who we are. And those are the people that we need. That's where we're needed most of all. First of all, and then I like to break it down in four different points: the local church, local needs, global needs, and then causes. And that too, there's a lot. Like I said, there's a lot of different ones, but just a few some things that have stood out to me over the years. We all have a soft spot in our heart for a certain cause or a certain mission or a certain need. And as we, if we have that, we like to do our giving in several different, not just all in one basket or one organization. But as you individuals that are interacting, and we heard a lot about helping people, as you're interacting with people, different people from your church communities, let's be alert, and I think it was also mentioned that we're alert and aware of the needs of people around us. Sometimes God is using us to do his work in a very small way. Recently heard a story of a missionary that was going to a foreign country to serve a certain organization that his church was involved with. He went, and after he was there, he saw what they were doing. It was a great work that they had done. They had made a huge impact on the local community. And as he was coming back, he was thinking about all the expenses of his travel, his time, and everything. Then when he came home, he realized that 400 yards down the street from his house, there was a young girl that had lost hope in life, had despaired, and had committed suicide during the time that he was across the pond serving others. The point I want to make is, let's be aware of those needs around us. There's people in our neighborhood. They may be of our church, or they might not be of our church, but there's people around us that are in dire needs today, in 2025, in our neighborhood, that we can help. It might mean only a little. It might only mean a little smile, or it might be something very insignificant, but it might be what God's asking of you today. And let's be aware of that. And even as you work with people as people helpers, I would encourage you to sometimes, if somebody is in a financial challenge, they're struggling to give a lot of money financially because of what they are or where they are in life. But there's a lot of small ways like that that they can give that make huge impact, lasting impacts, that if simply encouraged to do something like that, what they can contribute. Mark Anthony mentioned about the Donor Advised Fund. That's a good resource. I would highly encourage that if somebody is wanting to give unanimously to organizations, you can put it in December and allocate it next year as you continue if there's needs that arise, church, business, wherever. But that's why I would highly encourage that. Next, we're going to go to this. The next point is sacrificial. What can I offer? What do we have to offer? We all have 24 hours in a day. We all have that amount of time that God has given us. And there's only so much that we can do within that time. Share a little story of a guy that works for us that he's been through the corporate world. He worked the corporate world for many years. Now he's in his mid to upper 50s. And as I was prepping for this topic, I asked him about giving. He's a Catholic man, or a man of Catholic faith. And then recently he's been involved in a food pantry. And he just shared it with me. He said, back when I was in right in the corporate ladder, money was plentiful. And I had a lot to give. And he was busy traveling. So he said he would just write a check here and there or whatever. Then after he quit that job and was without a job for a little while, him and his wife started serving at their local food pantry in their church. And he said they have a lot of, he's up in the greater Cleveland area. And he said that back when he was giving, he would write checks, and that was a pretty easy thing to do, but he always felt kind of smug that he would give. When he started serving at the local food pantry, he said there would be homeless people coming in here. People coming in here with long hair, people that come in here to take advantage of the system. Some of them stink, but they come in here because they're hungry. And he said, I found that for me to get down close to those people, we do it as a form of giving, but he said, what I'm finding, it's changing me in here. It has more of an impact on me than just on those people, what the little bit of food that we're giving them. So again, getting down in the weeds and rubbing shoulders with those people, the homeless people on the street, we'll always have those people that are going to take advantage of the system. They're going to ride the system, cheat the system, do whatever they can. But I would challenge us that I don't think God is, we are responsible where we give, yes. But I think God is asking us to, sometimes it's not as much what we give, what we hand out, but what we receive in return, what it's doing for us, for me as an individual. We heard a lot about humility this morning. And I think as people realizing that Jesus gave his all so that we might live, giving that true love to our fellow man, our brother in need, be it a hungry man, be it a homeless man, whoever it may be, that we realize that we don't miss that opportunity to give. Going on to the cheerful principle. Actually, one thing I wanted to share. Recently, at the point of sacrificial, all of us have, like I said, have our churches. In our community, I'm going to share a little story about an incident that just happened in our community, but we have a lot of Schwarzentruber Amish people in our community, and they are very good people. They're very normal people. They have their challenges just like we do. In the past year, there were some young boys. One weekend, they made some bad choices, and long story short, this one young man, they had an accident in a car, and this one young man ended up at the hospital for several months, and he was in critical condition for many months. He had a lot of traumatic injuries, head trauma, but his dad was his dad has a little business that they make buggy wheels, so he was not a man with a lot of wealth. He didn't have a lot of cash flowing around. We all knew that there's a huge need, huge medical bill that's going to be happening for this, to cover this man's expenses. And amongst their circles, they have it the way they do. They have their own way of helping each other. It's a little different than ours. But the point I want to make is their system that they had did not reach around in any way or even close. Maybe 10%, but not much more than that. And one of our local churches that is in that area knew of this need. But this man, this young man's employer, knew that there's going to be a huge, huge expense. So he said something to his deacon. They got together, and they ended up putting an ad in our local church paper to start a fund to support or to pay for their hospital bills. And I talked to the deacon one time, and I asked him, what was the response that you got? He said, it's been overwhelming. We had a lot of money flowing in. He said, here and there, there's a naysayer, as always, that are really concerned, well, where's this money going, and how are they dealing with this stuff? Why are their people not doing more? But he said, the money kept flowing in. But as people helpers, he said, one evening, Ananias, this young man's dad, came down, brought some bills down. Then he said, he asked him, he knew there's going to be a huge ICU bill. He asked him, have you received your bill for that yet? He mentioned that when you get that bill, bring it. And Ananias didn't really comment anything, and then they kept on chit-chatting a little bit, and then finally he realized, he thought it almost seemed like he had the bill, so he asked him, do you already have the bill? And he hesitated, then he said, yes, I do. Then he said, did you bring it? No. No, I didn't. He asked me, well, why didn't you bring it? It's not even possible to pay this. Then he asked him, what is the bill? And he was very reluctant, but finally he said it's $1.3 million after they already had a couple hundred thousand that they paid. And then Uriah told him, well, bring it, we'll help you. And this man, he could hardly bring that invoice. He just knew there's no way. At Kende Sichtikat, he could not see through it. But that need has been met. That need has been met in several months' time because people gave. The point I want to make, though, is sometimes you might be helping somebody. There might be invoices. There might be bills that they don't want to share. There might be people in our churches, there are people in our churches that are having medical challenges or that are facing difficulties with health, medical, whatever it is. If you're called to be a deacon, called to be a supporting trustee, let's walk alongside them. Make sure that we're asking those hard questions about their financial status. Let's not burden them with that burden. We may not have those medical challenges, or we have been blessed with health in our family. We have not had a lot of medical expenses. Thank God. However, God might be calling us to serve him through them, or letting that happen to them so that we might serve. Don't hesitate, or don't leave those questions, or don't leave those stones unturned. Going on to cheerful, a little story of this young girl that the title of the story was Went to the Bridge. You may have heard this, but it was a young girl out in California that lived close to the Golden Gate Bridge, and she too had lost hope in life, and she went out one night. She left a note for her family. She said, "Going to the bridge, won't jump if someone smiles at me." Needless to say, life was gone. But she went out here to the bridge, she walked down to the middle, and there was many cars going back and forth, people walking, biking. Nobody smiled. Who this person was, I have no idea. The message I want to leave with all of us, a smile is something that all of us can give. And that might just make the difference for someone's life, if you smile. Sometimes you see somebody smiling and it's like, well, wonder what they're so happy about. But I think it's just a reminder to me that God is maybe calling me to make sure that I'm smiling. So let's smile as we're interacting with people. And then as we look at the relationship and the emotional support of the cheerful principle, many of you men have been called to serve as trustees and deacons, but you women also have a role in what you're doing. I'm going to share a personal story, and sorry if I get emotional here, but a couple months ago, we were going through some challenges personally, my wife and I. At work, things weren't all that great. We had some things in our church that we were struggling with a little bit. I knew it was pretty thick for my wife. I prayed that God would use somebody or something to help her that day. About middle of the afternoon, there was a knock on the door, and it was one of our minister's wives dropped by with a casserole and just some leftovers for dinner that night. She said, "I've been thinking about you all day, and I just wanted to stop by." And friends, she'll never have any idea the angel she was that day to my family. We had pulled pork that night. I don't know what else. That was not the point. But may she be blessed for being okay to bring leftovers, whatever it was, to somebody, because she felt that need. If God lays it on your heart, let's be intentional. Let's do something. And ladies, that role that you have, there's many times when us men overlook the hard things in life. We're fixers. We have our stuff all in the little, we're waffle brain. We have it all in the little waffles. Sometimes the women get accused of being spaghetti brain. Their noodles are all in a mess. But ladies, your role that you have, the role that you play, is a very critical role. The difference that you're making in people's lives. And I'm sure that many of you have accounts that you've given in that way. Keep it up. Giving from an eternal perspective, which kingdom are we building? We are living here in a kingdom in this world. Hopefully, we are not of this world. In Matthew 6, we know the account, no man can serve two masters. We cannot serve God and mammon. And then, where do we invest? Where do we invest the resources or the wealth that God has given us, or how do we give? Do we invest in Wall Street like we heard earlier? Do we invest in the deals that are the pyramid marketing scams? Do we invest in the get-rich-quicks that guarantee 6, 10, 11% interest return? Those are the areas that, if it's too good to be true, it's going to be too good to be true. And if God has given us money to give, resources to give, let's give to those to something that we can, that we, organizations or whatever, we let's invest in those things that we heard earlier. After this life, we'll be rewarded for those. A little story that I wanted to share that from Gary Miller's Know Before You Go book, and if any of you are helping people as trustees, as deacons, I would highly encourage you to read that book. It's called Know Before You Go by Gary Miller. But in that book, he writes of two different people. One is Ben Blessed, and the other one is Juan Worthless. And just a quick illustration of that, Ben Blessed was an American young man. He felt moved by the church, a certain need that a missionary had mentioned that he decided to sign up to go to a foreign country to serve. Juan Worthless was a young man in that country, and he heard that there's some people from America going to be coming to build this church or to help them with their church. He was looking forward to this because he was in construction, and he thought he didn't profess to have all the answers, but he knew a few things about construction in their country. And so these American young men came down here. They had their base where they would go to every night. They would dine their normal stuff, normal meals that they typically had in America. And Juan would go home to his soup and beans. And he was looking forward to meeting these young men, but soon after they were there, he realized that they were on their phones. They were had a lot of different things that they to keep them sidetracked, but they were having a great time doing the building, but they just kind of shrugged him off, brushed him off. So they did their work that week. They left for home, and Juan was the local guy there. He was, after they left, one evening before they left, they were going past Juan's house, and then one of the young men said to the other, "Look at that hut there. How can you imagine even living in that? That's not even livable." But that happened to be Juan's home, and he heard this. And after the young men went home, Juan was feeling kind of discouraged and depressed. He worked just as hard as they ever did. But it just so happened that God had placed him there and placed them in America. And these young men had come here to serve, but they completely missed the point. Not saying the work they did was done in vain, but the quote that really caught my attention, and this is a parable that Gary had created, I'm guessing, I don't know for a fact, but he just said that these Americans had much to share, but little to learn. And when Joseph mentioned about the needy, it just struck me how much we need to make sure, need to serve, to lead in humility, to give with a humble heart, that we can be, that we can meet the people where they're at. Going on to the exemptions, that was part of the topic here, request. How does giving affect my Social Security exemption? Should it affect my Social Security exemption? I'll just share a couple things like from that perspective. I know there's, not sure what the group is here in our community. Most Amish people are exempt from Social Security, and not sure how the situation is out here, but I'll share a little bit on that. Back in 1935, Franklin Roosevelt was the president at that time. There was many people that had gone to war, they were at the end of their life, and they didn't have any resources laid up or prepared for their end of life to support them through their sunset years. And he had many different requests coming in, being written to him from people pleading for assistance, pleading for help, that they were out of money, they were out of resources, and they were still needy. So he had these requests coming in. Finally, they put together the Social Security plan so that people plan for their sunset years. So every time, every paycheck, a little bit of money is being set aside so that when they reach a certain age, now they can draw from that so they have something laid up at the end of their time. And what the state or the government put this program in place because the church didn't take care of their people at that time. Some churches, I should say. So that plan was put in place, and then our forefathers, seeing what's happening with the when the government or the state takes control of that, they didn't like what they were seeing there. Therefore, they requested an exemption. So they were granted that. Not only were they granted the exemption, but they were also granted that if they, being that they are exempt, they now also don't have to, if they're exempt from receiving, they can also be exempt from giving. So they don't need to give into that. So the question, should that affect our giving? And I think the answer to that, everybody needs to answer that. My perspective is, yes, it should affect our giving. The reason I say that is if we have been exempted from that, now we are also being, as people exempt from giving or from receiving that, we still have that, and the government put that in place to save for latter years. So as you help other people, yourselves, whomever, if we, I think it's something that we need to train and teach our people to lay away for our future years. It's not, it can be an IRA is a good way to do it. It's not saying that we're laying up treasure for ourselves for the here and now so we can buy that boat, we can buy that cabin, we can buy that patio, but something for sunset years, just a little bit every month, and soon it'll continue to compound. It'll be there when we reach our sunset years when we can't do anything. And I'll just share a little story of something that happened in our community that I simply sharing, not being critical, but just sharing. There was a widow that had a lot of, her husband passed, and she had a lot of debt. And that debt was, again, the church reached out to the local community, the debt was taken care of, and to the point that she's debt-free. And then later on, as she was going through her life, she had a situation come up where they had a driver to go somewhere, and a lot of people had given to her. And then this driver had, they had several different stops, had several different groups of people to take. And at the end of the day, the driver was getting ready to, she asked the driver how much she owes him. And then the driver made a mistake, and he overcharged her. And this lady was quite upset that he overcharged me. Why did he, she knew it wasn't right. Why did he overcharge me? And the point I'm making is that if we have been given, even if it happened, if we are at some point taken advantage of in a little way, let's not be so critical and so concerned that we are very critical of people that might have shortchanged us for a few dollars after we have been given a lot. I'm coming up on my time here. Going to the end, I'm just going to wrap it up here. A life of purposeful giving. Give with eternity in view. If we think about being up there in front of Jesus on the last day, let's remember that's who we're going to face. What we gave at that point, I'll just, the verse in John 13:34, a new commandment I give unto you, that ye shall love one another as I have loved you. And as ye love one another, that ye also love one another. By this all men shall know that ye are my disciples indeed, if ye have love for one another. That verse is a verse that we, that's having that love for each other and giving to each other. That's the only biblical way that I have found that we can really truly justify that we are his disciples, or that we can be recognized as his disciple if we love as he has loved us. And with that, may our hands be open and continue to give as he has given us. Thank you for listening. Blessings.